and welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Big welcome to any visitors, massive welcome as usual to any newcomers that might be with us tonight, and we hope we're all going to hear a message that's going to encourage us to keep coming back. So without further ado, it falls to me to introduce our speaker this evening. Part of me doesn't know where to start. We all know him, this person that's with us tonight. He's become an incredibly important and an integral part of my recovery over the last few years. And I love him to bits. I love doing service with him. I'm looking forward to actually spending some time with him, actually, in the next couple of weeks, doing some service. That's going to be great fun. He's got an amazing, I respect his recovery. I respect him as a human being. And I love him as a brother, and he celebrated a major milestone of recovery recently. I'm hoping he's going to share a little bit about that and share his experience, strength, and hope, his journey into and through Narcotics Anonymous for the next 40 or 45 minutes. So, Michael, without any further ado, please share with us. Thank you, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, thank you. Hey, hello, everyone. Everybody, my name is Michael, and I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hello, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Glad you're here, mate. Thank you.
I am glad to be here. Thank you very much, Jim. And every one of you has taught me something to make me a little bit a better person. And I'm so grateful for all of you for being here. Yeah, I got today off because today is they celebrate Pride here in Edinburgh, and my boss said, "Oh, if you work Tuesday, I'll give you Saturday off." And I had no, and maybe it's my quote unquote ADHD. I just didn't think for 2 seconds. Oh, Pride is this weekend. Oh God. Oh. I was more, you know, the first focus I had was to come to this meeting. That was it. And to me, I don't need a day go marching the streets to celebrate Pride. I do that 24/7, 365. And not, you know, and I don't need a special day for it. I don't need to have a rainbow flag. I do not need any of those apparatuses. I'm proud of who I am as I am because of Narcotics Anonymous. It allowed me the opportunity to be who I am. And you too, Domino. Have a nice walk. I'm grateful to be here. And as I said before, as Steve alluded to, I celebrated a milestone which still hasn't really quite hit me yet, but it's slowly hitting me. Sunday, I celebrated 34 years clean. And one of the things that happened prior to being clean on June, the first time I ever decided to get clean, was I was going to hurt another human being again. If I didn't emotionally, physically, spiritually hurt my family, friends, and everyone else who disappointed them one more time, I was coming off of something, and I don't remember what it was I took. That was the nature of my using, because I would just use anything and anything from anybody, and you can just tell me to do this, and I just take that just because everyone else was taking it. You know, I'm starting backwards to go forwards, but I started using at 16. My very first drug was a joint, and that woke me up to a whole different level of reality. I was free for the first time. I mean, for years I felt kind of out of place and out of sync with rest of everybody else, you know. And I was just watching, and kind of give you some context right now. Prior to that, I was watching something on YouTube about people with who falls into those categories of being a bit weird. let's just kind of call it what it is. And I've always been a bit weird, and because I didn't know. I had incredible social, and to this very day still have a load of social anxiety. I do not like crowds. I don't like being the middle of the center of attention. The irony is I am the center of attention at this meeting. But I had never looked at that as an asset ever in my life, to being kind of introverted and watching other people. But I'll get to that probably along the way. So I just wanted to fit in everywhere. I wanted to fit in. And when someone gave me that first joint, I fit in. Albeit it was kind of a chemical way of fitting in, but it was a way in. And from that point on, I probably drank before I ever had my first drug. I probably done a lot of things before I had my first drug. And there's a lot of good reasons why. I lost my brothers when I was 11. My parents were about ready to divorce. There was constant turmoil in my household. There was constant turmoil before my brothers died, but that was the way my parents were. And my coping mechanisms really didn't, you know, I had to learn new coping mechanisms. All my life I wanted to, strangely enough, I wanted to be an actor, I wanted to be a dancer, I wanted to do all this other things. But one of the things that I always gravitated towards was a sewing machine. And that always made me feel like I was special. It was the one thing that actually made me feel positive about myself. Even if I made something and looked completely ridiculous, I was never apologetic about that. Unfortunately, my addiction took over. When I was young, I started shoplifting, got caught once, and they told me not come back to the shop again. They weren't called the cops, and that was the closest I ever been to being arrested. That flipped me out, so I never shoplifted again. And I kept using. I was trying to find a crowd that I can be a part of and never fit in anywhere. Just never fit in anywhere. And subsequently, I found a group of people I felt really connected to, and that's when my drug use kind of superseded, went into overdrive. I discovered, you know, when I came out of the closet when I was 15, 16 years old. And it was really strange how I just didn't feel comfortable about being around a lot of other gay people. I just didn't feel comfortable. I don't know why it was, you know. I just didn't, and I never feel like I was a part of that crowd. But when I discovered the punk rock crowd, I felt like I was alive. I could hang out with these people because it was the first bunch of people. And kind of reminds me of NA in a very strange way, because they were people that felt ostracized in society, and they wore the badge of being ostracized from society on their sleeves. It was where I just kind of learned how to not give a fuckness about my who I was, but I still used along the way. One of my best friends I met in 1980, I met her and my friend June, who I've known for, she's not on the program, so I've known her for 40 years, and she's one of the closest people I know of, and she knows a lot of my secrets, and I know a lot of hers, and I'm not going to tell you any of her secrets, but or mine for that matter. But she basically was the person I used to party with, and she was the person that actually was the one that helped me get clean in the first place. Got me, well, not directly, but indirectly got me clean. And it was just like the craziest time of my life. At one point, my family didn't want anything to do with me. And to this very day, we don't talk. And that's been kind of my Achilles heel. And at times and other times, it's just, it's okay. I'm willing to accept that. And then I was, she was probably the one person, the one only person that actually accepted me for who I am and what I was and allowed me to be as crazy as I was, because she was about as crazy as I was too. We kind of hung out together. If the chemistry was right, she would be my wife, but that wasn't going to happen. But she is the closest thing to a wife I've ever had, and as a matter of fact, I'm the godfather to her son. In June 4th of 1988, I had, like I said, I came to this conclusion. She came over wanting to have breakfast, and I wanted to kill her, and I was so angry at her that time when she came over. And it was about, I was late to work. I was getting the kind of the brow beaten from work, because my self-esteem was really, you know, by that time I probably used people up as much as I ever could, and nobody wanted to have anything to do with me. And and I got to this coffee shop that I usually hung out at, and there was a guy that I used to party with, and he just had this glow. You could tell when somebody has that glow of recover, you know, they've done something different with their life. And he said to me, and he asked me what was going on, and I told him, and he said, well, you know what? I don't think I can help you, but I know a place that could. And the funniest thing was, he took me to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting that was someplace I didn't even knew. I never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. I heard of AA. I'm not quite sure how I knew about that, but I never knew what Narcotics Anonymous was. And by the way, there's a passage in the book that talks about AA that I don't feel like I'm violating the traditions by specifying the specificity of that. Love big words. So he took me to my first meeting, and there I was, embarrassed to be there. I felt ashamed. I felt guilty. I felt all those emotions again. I didn't know what I was feeling, but I do remember, but when I felt all that and more, and all I could do, I couldn't look up. All I could do was look at the shoes of everybody. And that was it. And I did not even know what was happening at this meeting, right? So I left that meeting. I probably got a bunch of phone numbers I didn't use. And I don't know if I got a basic text or not. I don't remember anything about that first meeting, except that there were people there, and that was at that moment, I didn't remember anything. And on the 18th of June, I went to this party. I stayed clean and absent from drugs, but I just was having the worst. I mean, it was like an emotional as well as a physical detox from all this. And I was like, I needed something. And so I wasn't going to drink. I wasn't going to drink. And I took a, smoked a joint. And I just realized just now the irony of my addiction was my very first narcotic, for lack of a better word, was a joint. And the last one I ever had was a joint. And I always felt really weird about that. I needed to get to a meeting immediately. So that day, the next day I went to a meeting that happened to be just up the street from me. It happened to be of the Mother Fellowship. And I embarrassed myself. I actually told people I was new. I relapsed and I came back. And I was nervous about being there. And they said, just, you know, hang in there. It'll get better. And you know what? I went to that meeting. I went to that group, that one particular meeting spot. They say 90 meetings. They kept saying 90 meetings in 90 days. So I went to 270 meetings in my first 90 days. I probably did more in my first. I mean, there was only one day I didn't go to a meeting, but out of that whole time. But even still, I probably went to a meeting a day afterwards, because they had three meetings a day at that spot. And I felt really like, I felt like I was at home, but not. And if that makes sense. And then, and look at the time. Thank you. One of the things that happened was there was a person there who was, who was actually became one of my close friends in NA. And she basically she was like me. She felt a little lonely. She wanted a friend. So we became friends. And she also was going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And somehow she convinced me to do service in NA by being a merchandise chair. And at the time I didn't know what that was. And she said, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out along the way. And that's basically how I got into service in NA, through the back door of AA, which I thought was kind of funny. Anyway, but I realized I needed to go to NA meetings, and I didn't know of any ones except the ones that were kind of done. You see, at the time in 88, the meetings were there was a very small fellowship. There was only 27 meetings going on at any given time. So there wasn't that many meetings that you could go to. It was one place where I didn't even know where it was. And it was I lived in downtown Sacramento. And if I didn't specify that, so I didn't have a way of getting to those meetings. So I didn't know where to find them. So basically, when this meeting opened up in downtown Sacramento, I just went to it. It was a noon meeting, which later became, and I felt more welcomed. And it was that one piece of the puzzle that was missing throughout my whole recovery. And that was, it wasn't just the NA meeting. It was the connection of other addicts, kind of not just, because in the other 12-step program, I had to kind of tiptoe and talk about that, but I had to talk about my drinking, which wasn't it. And at the time, it wasn't as bad as what I used and what I was using and how I obtained how I was using, you know, the ways and means to get more. And that was what I did. And when I started going to the narcotics and the NA meeting there at this place on 27th and P Street, I felt home. I felt that piece of the puzzle was finally, that one piece of the jigsaw that wasn't there
I found it under the table and it was right there, and that fit perfectly. And that's when I kind of went to NA, and that became my life's blood for the next, good long time, chunk of time. I started going back to NA after being in the 12-step program for 18 months. And so I remember the feeling I felt when I first walked into that NA meeting, and that was that sense of relief, a sense of belonging that I never had in the years I was going to, the year and a half that I was going to those 12-step program. But I will kind of skip that for now. And as I said before, it was what, as I was describing the punk rock scene that I was talking about, the people who kind of felt like that they didn't belong. They wore, you know, they found their tribe that wore their badge on their sleeve. And interestingly enough, my friend who kind of got me into NA also decided, let's go to a convention. And I said, okay, cool. Where? Portland, Oregon. And I just like, and I've never been, you know, I've been to San Francisco, but never been to Portland. So I thought I'd go there. I'd go with her. And I was scared fucking to death because it was like, there were people there. People who were clean, people who were in recovery. And I was just panicking. It was the world, and I didn't know this, but it was the World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous in Portland, Oregon in 1990. I had no idea that was I just saw it was just, at the time, just saw it was like a Unity Day. I'd never seen so many people at a Unity Day before. That's because of the World Convention. What? I remember being very, very incredibly shy and incredibly insular because I didn't want to leave I hung out with Joyce. But, you know, she took me through. She said, you know, just hold on. It'll get better. I went through a lot of sponsors in AA, but when I found my NA sponsor, the guy that who is my sponsor, who actually spoke at the Higma group several months, maybe a couple of years ago, the one thing I missed in my life was, and the reason why I asked him to be my sponsor, because I saw him in action. We had this issue with the great little blue book or the little gray book. I forgot what it was. And everybody was trying to, and he was the RCM for the region, for Northern California region. And I remember how he kept his cool when everybody else was going crazy. And I said to myself, that's exactly what I wanted. And he got me through as much of the steps as he possibly could until I moved to San Francisco in 94. And he asked me this question, and it's a question I always ask myself whenever I do anything, am I running to or am I running from? And my answer was to him, yes, well then just go. And, you know, you'll find out what you if you are running to or running from when you get there. And when I got to San Francisco, and I lived there for the next 16 years of my recovery, it woke up every, you know, I loved the fellowship. And I kind of alluded to this, but it was also a time, it was also the first time I actually felt like my tribe of, you know, gay people were there and I felt a part of. And, but you know what? It was also the greatest place for me in the world because there was this immense, you see, the funniest thing about Sacramento, and I have to say this, I love the fellowship there, but there was no diversity. It was some diversity, but it was kind of a smattering. In the San Francisco fellowship, there was diversity. There would be people from all walks of life, from all different parts of the world, from all different parts of, and I felt so at home that it didn't matter what, you know, I felt like I found the people that made me feel special and made me feel awesome. In that fleeting moment, you know, and I just like, I met somebody at a meeting and I fell head over in madly, passionately in lust with them. And just like, and I spent the next 9 years with him. I found out that he was also had a mental illness that he wasn't addressing. And it was, it went from, I went from, oh my God, this, I did not know that I was going to come home to a corpse or I was going to come home to somebody who was depressed or whatever it was. I mean, it was just, there's a very long story behind that. But so I basically, you know, and that was the beginning of my not, of dealing with my disease. And I actually acted out in all sorts of different ways, except from using. And I was clean, but crazy. And the sad thing was, I never connected as much as I did with people as I went through a period where I didn't go to meetings for about 6 months, and I was even crazier. And I did not know how to talk to people. I was getting crazy, and I couldn't find the tribe anymore because most of the people that I connected with died, but they died clean. And it was the most craziest time of my life. I think from 12 to 18 years, I was absolutely off my head. And the only thing kept me from using was the narcotic, going to a meeting every single day. Subsequently, I went from one job to another one, and I lost that job, got a job. And I did not know what to think. I didn't know what to do. And then I reached that, you know, when I left my partner, my former partner threw me out of the house, and this happened when I had 12 years clean. It was like, oh my God, you fucking asshole. No, was that 12 years? No, I had more than that. When did that happen? Oh, well, doesn't matter. There was a member of the fellowship who reached out to me and said, look, you need help? Why don't you stay with me and we'll figure it out? And he let me kind of couch surf, but he also became one of my closest allies and one of my closest friends in Narcotics Anonymous. He got me, we basically did this sponsoring each other because we both had the same sponsor, but basically our sponsor was one of those people who had sponsored like everybody in the fellowship. And so we decided to sponsor each other. And in that, and in it of itself, that helped me stay clean. He also got me to go do more service in NA. If nothing else, service had kept me clean, kept me buoyant, kept me there. It just did all, you know, I needed to do service. I needed to be a part of this fellowship. And I'm trying to see what time it is because I'm going on and on. Oh, goodness. I got a few more minutes. From that time, you know, and spending time with Ray, who's my buddy, we did, you know, because of him and just keeping me, you know, helping me work the program to the best of my abilities, getting back to that first step, how powerless I was over my life, and how you know, I'm power, you know, of course, addiction, I'm very much powerless over. Powerless of narcotics and anything else. What I didn't know I was powerless over, and he kind of expressed it as people, places, things, situations, events, and circumstances as well. He, and how how my control issues with trying my mishandling all that made my life completely unmanageable. And we both connected on the fact that and he proved to me that I was completely insane. I mean, it was like by the time I got to that point, I was like, okay, I am absolutely, absolutely, unequivocally insane. And turning my will and life over to making a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God. Oh, fuck, wait, make, sorry, but. What is that? Oh, came to believe. Well, let me tell you, I had gone to a meeting somewhere along the way, and they were talking about the second step. And this speaker was talking, said this one beautiful line, and I just love it. And it's something I hold on dear. It says in the second step, we come to believe. It doesn't say we come to know a power greater than ourselves, which restores the sanity. And when I heard that, I just thought, and he went exposed upon that, because it doesn't, because you can believe all you want, but if you do nothing with it, it's only a fantasy. And so you have to come to believe, and you have to come to act on that fantasy, that action, or it's just plain fantasy. And I had an issue with, because I grew up in a Baptist family, I just really didn't want this God particle, this anything, this entity in my life. And being in San Francisco, as you know, as I said, there's a diversity there. I mean, there were people who were into Wiccans, and there were people who were Baptists, and there were people who were Buddhists, and there were people who were in all sorts of different philosophies. And I went to a couple of atheist agnostic meetings, and they were the most angriest people I ever met in my entire life, and I didn't like them. And so what I had to do was, as my friend Ray says, come up with a concept you can relate with. And I came up with many different concepts of that higher power. And one that I hold on to dearly, and it's still my higher power, because I kind of shuffle back and forth with anything else, is the power of the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And this fellowship has kept me buoyant, and I'm going to kind of rush this along. In 2003, I met the partner that I now live with, and now, was it? I'm sorry, 2006, because we've been together 16 years, and I've been living here for 12. And I met him. I thought he was fascinating, and we got to talking and whatnot. And I said, I will see you in Scotland. It's one of those weird things. I'd never thought I'd say in a heartbeat. And I was just like, yeah. And he said, yeah, right. Okay, right. Whatever. So there was something that told me I needed to go. And my friend, and my fear of doing anything different was on full display. And my friend Ray said, look, if I give you the money, if I lend you the money, would you go? I was like, well, yeah, I don't have a passport. So I had to rush and get a passport, and I did all that. And I did. And I came here. And I met some fascinating people in Scotland and came back for 4 years of running until I made the decision to move here. But the thing that that this fellowship has given me is something I never thought I had. It's like, I'm going to kind of use a Wizard of Oz reference, I'm sorry. But there was this, that scene, if for those who've never watched it, there's a scene in the end of Wizard of Oz saying, Dorothy wants to just go back home. And you could have gone back home anytime you wanted to. All you have to do is click your heels 3 times. And how that kind of pertains to this is like, you know what? You don't have to look for home. Home is wherever you feel comfortable. Wherever you feel that feels right to you. And so when I came here, I realized that I had to make a go of it. And whether or not it was the right decision or wrong decision, the only way I was going to know if I made the right decision or not is to do it. And I did. And I don't have any, and you know, the one funniest thing was I have no regrets. 12 years down the road, still don't have any regrets. And one of the nice things about looking at my past as I do is I realize a couple of salient points. One, that no matter where you go, there you are. And your past is going to follow you. And when I told you about my parents, and I probably alluded to this, I never quite understood why they were so angry all the time. And somewhere along the way, I made amends to my parents for my behavior. I had to make amends to my mother twice because I didn't do it right the first time, so I had to do it again. But and apologize for my behavior and change, you know, because one of the things about the sixth and seventh step is about changing your, you know, looking at your defects and changing either changing your defects into assets, or because I do not believe, since I don't believe in a power, you know, God is understanding. One of the things I learned about the steps is if there's any denial about my character defects, they got exposed in my fifth, fourth, and fifth step. And then in that seventh step, I had to make a decision what I need to change and how I was going to change it. One of the things I kind of inherited from my parents was their kind of internal self-hatred and anger. And I did not know where that came from. And I realized after listening to, you know, the message of recovery comes in different forms, shapes, sizes, and whatnot. And one of the things I've learned from that, from watching other people, and somebody once told me that if you are aware, you'll hear your solutions in the most odd places. And one of my goals of this, of my life right now, is to be less angry about the past. And part of the reason why I realized that was somebody was describing, I was just remembering my parents moved from South Carolina to California. And one of the things that they brought with them, they may have took the physical person out of there. They didn't leave the anger behind, and it followed them all the way to California. It didn't go away. And I realized that some of the stuff that I had, I still brought to me to Scotland. And so one of the things I had to look at was how can I be a better, you know, how to be less angry? How do I do this? And I watch other people and hear other people and how they dealt with those things. And the magic of listening to other people in Narcotics Anonymous and their process is the fact that they found a solution to get through some of those difficulties in their life. And I'm totally grateful. I love, you know, and the one other thing I'm going to say, and I'm just going to kind of, I love this group. I actually came here one day when I was visiting San Francisco in 2013. And I thought it was really interesting to go to an online meeting. What a novelty. And now it's been the source of strength that I get every single day. And being online, and not because I'm inherently lazy, so therefore if I can get away with not going someplace, I will. To listen to you guys. So what time is it? Sorry. I'm going to give myself 2 more minutes. You know, coming to this group, particular group, and meeting my friend Steve, it's been such a fucking blessing to hear the diversity that I really, really, truly crave. Because all my life I wanted to be a part of, but I didn't know a part of what. And the irony is, when I came to NA, I found the island of misplaced, the island of misfits, People didn't feel like, and every single time I come to a meeting, I hear people who felt like they didn't belong, but they felt, once they came to NA, they felt like they belonged. And that's why I found this group. And when I went, and you know, and the funniest thing is, I've learned how to belong in places that I didn't think I belonged, because I had to listen for the similarities and not the differences. Because I can see differences all the time. And you can see differences in me. But one of the things I've learned since I've been clean and since I started coming to this group specifically and Scotland is I found, you know, I've gone to meetings in other places in the world that I was the only black gay man there. And you know what? They accepted me. And it all boiled down to, and I think in a very weird sense, I think it took 40 minutes to explain to you self-acceptance in a long form. And it's clearly, to me, the culmination of working the program to the best of my ability, trying to do this, do service to the best of my ability, listen to the best of my ability without judgment or prejudice, and taking responsibility for my own life. And that was the toughest part of it all. So thank you, each and every one of you at this meeting. Thank you for allowing me to be me. Thank you for allowing me to learn, to discover, to to be the person that I am. I wouldn't have gotten here without you. And thousands and countless of thousands of others. I probably missed out on a lot of things in my share, but I'm way beyond where I was going to share about, and I'm not sure if I made any sense whatsoever, but it doesn't matter. That it is what it is. But thank you so very much for allowing me to share, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Steve. Bye.